Hello and welcome to pod 47 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grissom from Palace TV, which you can watch on YouTube, the official Palace app, eagles.cbfc.co.uk, social media channels, including TikTok, and on my TV every night as I watch myself. Sat next to me, cringing, is Dominic, one of our editors. Dominic, rumour has it that you've been on TikTok a lot recently. What kind of things have you been watching?
Lots of memes. Mainly memes.
Memes? I've noticed there's quite a lot of dance routines. Normally girls with their mums. Do you ever watch any of those?
I join in when I watch at home. You know, just get the phone going and just have a little dance. It's quite fun.
Okay, there's a reason why Dom's an editor. We won't be talking to him again. Okay, moving on. What is on the pod? We have got three big hitters of the Palace world. We end with Roy Hodgson. In the middle, we've got Wilfried Zaha. But first of all, as the top... Hold on, my Google assistant's just gone off there. As the top person in Palace, the top of the sandwich, the bread on top of the Wilfried Zaha, it's Statman, and he sat in the seat of someone that knows more about football than him.
Statman. Statman.
Yep, Statman is at home today. He's in the analyst's chair at the stadium. How does it feel?
Commanding. And I feel lacking severely in knowledge to be sat here. Who's normally the one sat here then?
So normally where you are is Rob Weaver, who is the first team analyst.
Yeah.
And next to him will be Tom Johnson, who is his sidekick.
Yeah.
His minion. And then hovering around, stood up, is Ben Stevens, who used to be first team analyst. Now he's like head of recruitment analytics, but he also oversees them as well. He's just buzzing around, putting me off normally. He normally talks so much. Like a few weeks ago, I played Glad All Over before the players were even coming out because it automatically went onto it on Spotify because I wasn't looking because he was just chewing my ear off.
Yeah. Was that... I think I remember that. Was that Southampton game?
I did it at the Southampton game.
Yeah.
But I did it before that.
Oh, there were some disgruntled fans there.
I did it at the West Ham game on Boxing Day first.
Yes.
And then I did it... I made the same mistake again, which is sackable.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We've got this on air. Grierson out.
Yeah. Yes, Grierson out.
Grierson out.
Grierson. They sit up here.
Yep.
For those... not in the room with us at the moment, which is everyone who's listening.
Yep.
We're in the little white rooms at the back of the main stand towards the tunnel end.
Yeah.
Where there's perspex.
Yeah.
Across, tinted, so it looks darker outside.
Yeah.
You don't get as much of the atmosphere as we'd like. In fact, I'd like to have no windows, to be honest.
And you know what? If the ball goes above a certain height, you've got no view of it.
No.
A high cross.
Well, to my right here, I'm sat where Mike Rankin, the PA announcer, sits.
Yeah.
To my right here is a screen, as you can see, a slightly big one. That will have the match feed on it. So when the ball goes on the left-hand side in the corner between the White Horse and the main stand, can't see that play, so everyone's attention switches over to the right to look it on a monitor. And on top of that is a smaller monitor called the VAR monitor.
Oh, here we go. Go on, then. Let's get you started on your favourite subject.
And that's where... we see what they're sending us from Stockley Park, and then in the gallery there, coming out the speaker, is what they're saying to the ref.
Got you.
Which is very interesting.
Oh wow! So the eyes and ears here.
Yeah. So the Joel Ward red card, at the last game, so we could hear, well, we could see the first replay and went, oh, that's not a red card. Then you can hear them saying to the ref, okay, we've got an on-field review here.
Yeah.
We think you need to look at this because. Blah-de-blah. And then he runs over and you hear them saying, okay, we're just playing this now. What you'll see now is his foot going in and it plants on the ground between the player's legs, so there's no contact, and the ref watches it and then turns around and doesn't give the red.
See, I need to sneak in here on a match.
It's really fascinating.
That is fascinating. And that is where the criticism lies, isn't it? Because we're not hearing that feed.
Yeah.
We don't know what they're checking. We don't know conversation. Rugby and cricket... it's so clear, isn't it?
Yeah.
We know.
So we don't hear the ref. I wish we could hear the ref. Because
With
the Michael Oliver one, you could see them, you could hear them saying, I want you to take a look at it. And then you could see him lip reading it, him saying, I'd rather not.
Yeah, interesting.
Because he didn't want to have to go to the monitor, but they said, no.
Get yourself over there, boy.
I think it's because he missed the Milivojevic intended head movement.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So that is is very interesting.
Now, the analyst side of it, which you touched on, very interesting. Will these guys then radio down to Ray or Roy, basically because they've got such a better view of it? Because the view down there, when I do my tours on a match day, you always end on there, and say, isn't the view horrific? Because it's not just pitch side, you're on a slope. Like, the view could hardly be much worse.
Yes.
So they get such a better...
Yeah, they radio down. Dave Reddington, first-team coach, has the earpiece.
Yeah.
So they will... When something happens, they will... The bench will say, hold on, wasn't that a handball in the box?
Yeah.
And they'll radio down and say, no, they've had a look at it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It hits his chest or whatever.
Or they can say, Roy, just one for you in the presser. That was a definite handball. Yeah. We should have a pen.
Well, yeah. What they do, as soon as the whistle goes at half-time or full-time...
Yeah.
Pick up their laptops and sprint down to the dressing room because they'll have clips ready to show the manager of anything that. So, for example, set pieces if someone's not picking up the player they should, or why is this player always free at corners and they can show and then they can amend.
I love
it
that. And they're whacking it up on the big screen that I've seen the projector that comes down. Are they showing that to the whole team or just to Roy?
I don't know. I think they'll just show it on their laptop to Roy. Save time, not much time, and then full time they go down and show them.
That's the last time you want IT issues, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. No, honestly, it'll play. Come on. Buffering.
But as you mentioned in an old past pod, they do have an iPad on the bench.
Yeah.
So they can do that. Although there's been a few
first season
the company that provides it. There's like technical. There have been a few issues.
Oh, you don't want glitches.
Which is funny because
our head of IT
Ben
running
was
about.
Laughing because he was. We were watching before the game last week. I think it was the Leicester game in here.
Yeah.
And he could see the analyst of Leicester struggling with the iPad, and one of the coaches looking at it, and he texted him and said, "Are you having the same issue with that?" And he was like, "Yeah, it's really annoying."
I love that. There's got to be, you know, like you hear the old school ways of gaining an advantage were like in the changing rooms. Like the old Wimbledon team were famous for this, whether this was true or not. But the hot water not working, the benches would be that bit lower just in case they'd pull a hamstring going down, splinters in them as well, and just wet floor everywhere, and just a horrible, grim room.
Mm.
And you just wonder if nowadays the advantage is in IT. You hack the tablet, you send it down, can't get on, mate, Wi-Fi's dreadful. You just wonder. Not that we'd...
That'd be a good idea, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The other one, talking about getting an advantage, is so Newcastle away.
Mm.
Ben used to be analyst at Newcastle, so he knows the pitch. And if you've ever seen St James's Park, it's fascinating when you notice it. It's on a slope.
Yeah.
It's such a bad slope that the ad board at the halfway line, you can see everything. And by the touchline, it disappears.
Yeah.
Because it's on such slope, so you know to
commercial
nightmare. Swap ends so that you're shooting downhill in the second half.
Yeah.
But
that's the old saying, isn't it? We'll be fine in the second half, lads. We're shooting downhill. Yeah. Unsurprisingly.
So that's what happens up here.
Yes.
It's good. I don't mind it. If it would be perfect if it didn't have the glass and you could actually hear the crowd properly.
Yeah. In all seriousness, I would love to be here on a match day. You're getting everything that the fans want.
If you ever
want to
pop up, you're welcome.
Yeah.
I know you're probably schmoozing.
I've got entertainment to be done, mate. Schmoozing to be done.
We've just edited some videos with you in, haven't we?
Have you? Edited me out.
Promoting all the not corporate, the premium.
Thank
packages
you, Chris. Thank
that
you,
we
Chris.
Have here.
Yeah, good man.
Yeah. There's you interviewing people.
It was great. Yeah, interviewed Mark Bright last match day.
And Jenk Tosin as well.
Thank you very much. Lovely man. Lovely man.
Nice.
He was worried though because he had to be in the changing rooms at 2 with Roy, or else I imagine he would have got a fine. And we started the interview at 1:54.
Oh God.
But he was remarkably relaxed for a man playing with fire. But yeah, went down really nicely. The Turkish Harry Kane.
Lovely. Well, what?
Chris frantically checking the time.
Well, we're 7.5 minutes in.
Well, talk me through this week's
not
pod.
A single
Chris.
Stat.
Talk me through. No, not
don't
a single
ask me that because we're recording this before I've even thought what's on
Brilliant.
It.
Brilliant. Okay, let's.
I think there'll be something Andros Townsendy.
Good.
We'll get sent that from here. He did a thing the other day with the Premier League.
Yeah.
Possibly Wilfried Zaha. He's at a thing. We're recording this on Thursday morning. He's at a thing this afternoon in a school, but I'm not sure whether we're getting the footage from that today or not.
Okay. Sure. So he's no idea how long this pod needs to be.
It could just be me.
We don't know if we're
could
opening.
Could be you in a press conference.
me
what
in
else
a conference.
Have I done? We opened a homeless hub last week. Maybe I'll chuck some interviews in from that, maybe.
You do what you want.
I don't know.
You make the executive call.
I haven't decided yet.
Can we, before we whittle on, get out of chat and into stat, you're very cleverly avoiding what you owe all listeners here, which is an apology.
Okay, what did I do?
Formal or not, what you did, Chris, it was the cardinal sin, really, of stats. You disrespected them, okay? You called one up, you said that's a useless stat. That will have no meaning to the game. Stat. What happened? Did you know the stat in question? Do you want to bring it up?
Man City managers not winning on their birthday.
Absolutely. Four times that had happened. And you're like, completely irrelevant stat. That had no bearing on the game.
Yeah.
Happened again, well, mate. They didn't draw. Five.
They didn't draw because it was his birthday, though, did they?
It was a stat to take note of, though, wasn't it? It was a stat of importance.
No. Yeah, okay, go on. I'll let you have it, because
you like
it's
him.
A stat that made it onto, wasn't it, on Match of the Day? It was on a few places. They talked about it, so.
Yeah. Clearly.
You can have that. I'm sure his birthday had no bearing on the game, but well done.
Yeah.
If it makes you feel any better.
And weaseled his way out of the apology. Anyway.
I formally apologise for calling your stat irrelevant.
Yeah, good. Can we have this, that as the soundbite for this episode?
No.
Just you apologising.
No,
okay.
No.
We move on then, shall we? Do you want me to stat you, mate?
Yeah, I mean stat, that's me around stat me in the face.
It's the whole reason I'm here. So if you didn't want that, it would be slightly bizarre. Right, well, let's start. So Everton v Palace coming up on Saturday. We'll start with Everton then. Not the time to play them, is it? Not the time to play them. We're sighing. We're looking down here as we overlook the pitch. Under Silva, their last 11 games, they lost 8 of them. Boy, would that have been a time to play him. Under Ancelotti and the Ferguson era, we're combining the two here, they've lost just once in 10. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's a good start.
Thanks, mate. Thank you for verifying.
How many have they won of those? Just because, only because I think, because recently we'd only lost 1 in 11.
Yeah.
And yet, all of a sudden, people are saying, we've only won 3 in 18.
Yeah, I was
like, hold on, in the space of what, two games, we've gone from an amazing unbeaten record to we haven't won record.
It's how you manipulate stats, isn't it? At one stage we'd lost just 1 in 9. I was whittling that out in the premium areas before kickoff, and then we lost 3 in a row, and I've stop using that one. If you want to know points then, they've got the second best form in the league over the last 10 matches. Liverpool top with 30 points out of a possible 30. Everton in second with 19 points.
Okay, so they've got a lot of points.
They've got a lot of points, mate. They're winning a lot of matches. And they've scored in every single game that Ancelotti's been manager for.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
So I've got to go all the way up to Liverpool.
You have,
to watch a decent Everton team.
Yeah, nice ground, though.
Yeah, I love going there.
One of those grounds proper to get stadium. There. Exactly. Proper football ground. Oh, proper ground. Lack of seating area. Have to queue extra long for a beer. Toilets, not enough of them, but proper football ground.
Yeah, proper.
Yeah.
Four different stands. That's what I love.
I completely agree.
That's what I love about Selhurst Park.
Completely agree.
This, for me, once I get the new main stand here, it will still be... I just like... Four stands having their own character, and also having each stand has a certain type of fan within it. Whereas you go to somewhere like Southampton and it's a bowl.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of that.
We're football purists.
Yeah, we are.
No, I completely agree. And I'm not sure your football travelling would have taken you as far. Carlisle, for me, one of my favourite grounds of all time. Exactly that. Every single stand, completely different. One of them, they clearly started... and just didn't finish until much later on.
Yeah.
But it just has such an appeal to it, such character.
I'll have to check it out.
Whereas you look at the King Power and St Mary's, was that the same architect? That is the same stadium.
Yeah, there's a lot that are the same architects.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, it's just pathetic.
There's other ones
it's
in
pathetic the pathetic stadium.
There's other ones in the league as well. I'm sure there's one like Colchester where you go to it, and it was built really quickly, but it's, I can't remember. It's the exact same stadium as another one I've been to. They literally just plonk it in.
Yeah.
Whereas this, look at it. Like, stands as... Yeah. Oh, I love looking at it.
As we overlook here.
Stands built at different periods in the club's history.
Let me talk you through as we look to the left. The Whitehorse Lane stand. One of the lowest stands for capacity in the Premier League. But there's 48 executive boxes in there. Built in 1992, just in time for the start of the Premier League.
Yep.
Beautiful stand. And the Arthur Waite, how many do you think that holds?
Arthur Waite's a lot.
Yeah.
Arthur Waite is something like... Is it 8? It's not 8,000, is it?
More.
10,000.
Just under. Yeah. 9.5.
The main stand is 8, is it? Or am I wrong?
6,
about
I think.
Is it 6 and it's going up to
14?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so deceptive, the Arthur Waite, when you look at it, and then you say, and you just, for those that have sat at the back of that, you realise how far back it is when the view isn't quite what you thought it would be.
Moving on.
But worth. He squirms in his seat. Shall I get back to statting, mate?
Yeah.
Before we go.
There's no restricted view on these stats.
No, we go.
You are a pillar of strength in the stat world.
Here we go. Let's have one more negative one about Everton Palace, and then we'll get onto the positives. Everton got a tidy record against us as well, unbeaten in their last 10 Premier League matches against us. They've won 4 and drawn 6, and kept a clean sheet in each of the last 3. So, yeah, good. But, look, let's look for positives. We always like to look at stats and try and dig out some positive ones. And these are them. So we've had 5 Premier League wins against Everton, and 4 of them have come at Goodison Park. So if we're going to beat them, it looks like it's going to have to be away from home. So that's a slight positive there. We've won so much so that that's actually our happiest hunting ground. So we've 4 Premier League wins at Goodison Park is our most away from home. That's amazing. Stadium. Equal with Leicester away. So summing.
I'm not sure I've been told there for any of them.
Any of the wins?
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Oh, the curse is on his way.
How long was the most recent one?
Most recent one.
I'm going to have a look. Hold on.
Okay, have a look. Last away win there. Talking. September 2014.
There you go.
You weren't here. Weren't even engaged.
October.
Okay. So yeah, kicked off.
Yeah,
then.
So there haven't been any since I've been here.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let's hope that.
But
yeah.
I wasn't at the last. We lost the last one. I wasn't at that, so yeah. It's not because of me.
What was special about that game, stat-wise?
The last game. Mm. It was the last time Luka Milivojevic missed a penalty.
There he is.
Is that right?
He does his homework, doesn't he? Yeah. His only miss away from home.
Oh, okay, yeah. The other one was Man City.
Yes, absolutely at home. Game was delicately poised when he took that pen, wasn't he? Was it
0-0
at the time?
It was 0-0. I remember because I was
as well. Lost 20.
I went to an NFL game at Wembley, I think. So I was watching the game on my phone on the way back.
Yeah.
It was 0-0. Yeah. He missed that, and then we.
It's 2 we conceded. Yeah.
Conor Wicker made his comeback in that game, I believe.
There you go. Positives. Silver linings.
Right at the end.
Silver linings. Let me talk Palace's form then. One of our last 10 now, and winless in 6. The only concerning thing for me is our pillar of strength was always our clean sheets, and we've now gone 9 matches without keeping a clean sheet, which
is
the longest run in the competition. Yeah, we've had filthy sheets, exactly.
Absolutely, yeah. Sodden, soiled sheets.
Well, you say that they're sodden. We have only conceded more than 1 goal in 2 of those 9 games. So okay. We tend to just concede the 1 goal. That's been costing us, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So hopefully we get back to it. And just on that last goal, actually, let me just give support to our big man, Vicente Gaeta. I'm a keeper.
I haven't got the energy to pull you up on your pronunciation of his name.
Can you? Vicente Gaeta.
Guaita.
Do you want to try it again?
So it's Guaita.
Vicente Guaita.
No, but it's Vicente.
You've gone with a B.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because we're Spanish, right? We're cultured.
But if you want to do the English version.
Yeah, let me do that.
Vicente.
Vicente.
You don't need the ch. Ch is Italian.
Okay. And Guetta, can I go that? Like David Guetta?
No, Guaita. So
Guaita.
This is a shade of white, right? This desk in front of me.
Where's it going?
This
with
bit
this?
Of paper, right?
Yeah.
Put that paper down on that. That bit of paper is whiter than that bit of desk. Put a G in front of it. That bit of paper is whiter than that.
Thank you. So
Vicente Guaita.
Guaita.
It's fine. It's a good English Guaita. Way of doing it.
Okay. Well, Guaita. Just absolutely.
I would have loved it if you just said it right.
Yeah. Anyway, Vicente Guaita.
Vicente Guaita.
After all that, Guaita. Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately.
Oh, my God. What have you got there? You've pulled out a printed stat that's on your phone as well, but an A4 paper.
You ruined the magic of pod. Yeah, you ruined the magic of pod. Just as important, this stat was before the Sheffield United game, but it shows him quite clearly and comfortably at the top of the table for saves in relation to expected goals. So basically, it's a way of calculating how many goals they've saved effectively. Yeah. It's the most accurate way of us calculating this, and he's head and shoulders above this. So he's basically saved 6.28 goals.
And I guess what after the other one, does that go down to 5.28 because there wasn't even a chance.
Yeah,
but he's still in the lead of this.
Still in the league, and so much so he's a whole 2 goals ahead of Dubravka, Henderson, and Foster, who are on ranging
that's
from 4.71. Exactly, and the bottom of the table, not looking. Do you think
I've seen it on the top?
He's seen it on his.
But he's not very good at the moment, is he? Yeah, Kepa,
you're better than him, mate. Yeah. So effectively, he's close to 8 goals.
70 million was he?
It's, yeah, outrageous amount. Outrageous amount. The amount of Chris Grierson's you could get for that. yeah, what a nightmare that is. Just thinking out loud. Grierson out. Yeah, sorry, mate. Kepa, 7.79 goals. He's effectively let in that he should have saved.
That
cost Chelsea.
Is crazy.
Massively so. Massively so. If you get it on the other end.
Who?
Getter. David Getter. If you had Guaita, on the other hand.
Very good.
Massive amount of points up. So anyway, just a bit of support to our big man. And, you know, it's the hardest thing. It's the loneliest position in football by a mile. You make one mistake, it's goal.
Yeah.
You know, even a defender, if you let someone through, you can hope the keeper will let you off. A striker, missed the ball from a shot, doesn't matter, really. You know, it's not, well, it does matter, but not going to cost you a goal. So I feel from it's such a lonely place. And nowadays, it's just all about your psychology and your mental strength, isn't it?
Yeah.
How you bounce back. And I thought he bounced back.
He made some great saves after that.
Exactly. And you've seen keepers crumble in the Champions League final, Liverpool lad.
Yeah.
Just crumbled, didn't he? With that,
Karius, is that?
Karius, that's it. And let the Bale shot.
Yeah.
Bale shot, was it?
I can't remember.
Yeah, anyway, exactly. You just see he's completely let that get to him. And Guaita just soldiered on and made some top saves after that. So I'm sure it bounced back. Anyway, let's roll on. A few more stats before we look like we're getting kicked out here.
There's people coming. The legend, the club legend, Terence Byfield is over there.
Terry Byfield. Absolutely.
Looking resplendent with his new haircut.
Yeah, lovely chop. Yeah.
Quite a few of us had haircuts. I had a deadline day haircut in the morning just so I looked good on camera. So sadly, no one got to see it.
Well, our production team got to see it, didn't they? Yeah, yeah. And Mrs. Grierson. But anyway, enough of haircuts.
Yes, okay. Moving on.
Let me roll on. So just on to... rolling on to just a stat dug out, really, from the last game. What was special about our starting lineup from the last game?
It was the oldest lineup we've ever put out in the Premier League.
Well done, well done. Yeah,
I've been reading stuff. I haven't read this Octopack. I never read it in advance because I like to be surprised.
Yeah, good plan. I
read that somewhere. Yeah, okay. Our oldest.
Well, this last one, this is just... I'm reading into this stat for my
interpretation. So if we name the same 11 on Saturday, we'll break the record again, won't we? Because they're all a week older.
Yeah, good. Yeah. I like where your head's at there. Keep going. Yeah, absolutely. But I've got one stat here that could hopefully help you predict where this game's going to go.
Okay.
So Everton have scored a league high of 61% of their Premier League goals in the first half. So 19 of their 31 goals have been scored in the first half. What do we love at Palace?
Second half goals.
We do.
We do not love first half goals
at all. We like the score to be 0-0, preferably, don't we, at half time. Keep it tight, nick it in the second half. We had 77% of our goals this season scored in the second half. So I'm going to go positive. I think the filthy sheet record will carry on. There will be no clean sheet. And Ancelotti, as we just mentioned, in every game he's been manager, Everton have scored. So I see them scoring first half. And do you know what? It's been ages since a Luka Milivojevic penalty.
Yeah, it has, hasn't it?
I think it's time for him to bury the demons of that Goodison Park miss last time out. So I'm being positive. I am going 1-1.
1-1, okay.
1-1. And the prediction?
From me?
CPFC's Chris Grierson?
I think it's going to be 3-2 to Palace.
I love it. I love it. There's literally no point in asking you the prediction. You know, if you had your way...
I would have gone 2-1, but 2-1's such a common score.
Gone
3-2. Well, we'll let him, but we'll win.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm going 3-2.
3-2.
It won't happen.
See, you know how you do Mark Lawrenson's table at the end and they work out like where the team would be?
Yeah.
We've won it every single game.
And we'd be above Liverpool.
We'd be above Liverpool. They're pathetic charge for
I'm
the
positive.
Title.
I'm positive.
I like it. But it's basically how do you predict a win is when I ask you, isn't it?
3-2.
3-2. Okay, 3-2. 1-1 me.
3-2 or 2-2.
Okay. That is pretty much it for stats from me.
Okay.
Other than we were having a quick debate in the Beak Street office yesterday. Shout out to the Beak Street boys.
Shout out.
I walked past an all-time top sports legend yesterday.
Okay.
Who do you think it was? I mean, we'll be here forever.
Steve Redgrave?
I'll narrow it down. No, but right lines. And right lines, but not
Steve
British.
Steve Redgrave, I saw him on my street in Richmond trying to work out how to use the pay and display machine. Anyway, carry on.
Did he work it out?
I don't know. I didn't offer him any help either. He's an Olympian.
He lives in Richmond. He's got enough money, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're not paying for that.
Take the fine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Showboat with a parking fine. No, but it's Olympics.
Olympics. Mm. Greg Rutherford.
Mate, you're an all-time sports legend.
Oh, all-time. Danny Thompson.
No, but
you've
again,
probably seen him around Putney, though, haven't you?
Yeah.
He's got his own gym.
Yeah.
My mate goes there.
Doing yoga.
He actually leads the classes. Danny Thompson. Yeah, like, go on, Alex. Get your knees up.
Lovely guy. Went to school with his son. Yeah. Oh, nice. Shout out to Elliot. Yeah. Lovely gym. Anyway.
Elliot Daly. No, Daly Thompson. Shut up, Chris.
Nearly got there, yeah.
He's a Palace fan, though. Elliot Daly, rugby player.
Yeah. Watched him last weekend. Was that the
really?
Game? Yeah, yeah. anyway, what on earth are we chatting about?
Olympian. Clue. Give me another clue. All-time great.
Yeah,
British.
Won three. No, global. Non-British.
Usain Bolt.
Thank you. I walked past
him. Usain
Bolt. I walked past him and I did a bit of a double tap. Like, oh my, gee. You know when you walk past him that famous?
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God. And then I had the genius idea to turn around and walk past him and overtake the world's fastest man. Problem is, he had the biggest security posse ever.
Really?
I couldn't get around him.
Where was he? Going in the Puma store or something?
I was at a betting exhibition yesterday. At the XL. So he then DJ'd.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, for a betting brand.
At the betting thing, yeah.
Yeah. Played a lot of Stormzy. So anyway.
Nice. Thanks for that story. I don't know what you were doing at a betting event.
Absolutely fine. Chris, introduce us. Next bit of the pod. You've no idea.
Next up is something else.
Statman there. And as you heard, we were discussing what was going to be in the pod. But because we went on for so long, we've just got two other things, but they're great. Here is Wilfred Zaha talking to Premier League Productions.
Well, thank you for speaking to us. It's good to see you. New haircut. You had some good comments on that.
Yeah, I don't think people can get used to the fact that I've cut it. Like, it's just like the other day I had to put on my Instagram, like, let the hair go, it's gone. But yeah, man, I feel like it's something that I needed, like, because dreadlocks weigh so much in your head. So, yeah.
You'd be a bit faster now then, I guess.
Yeah, I feel a lot faster on the pitch. So, yeah, it's a nice change, I think.
Okay, cool. Let's have a quick chat about this event today. Talk to me about what you've seen so far and what you've heard from the school kids here.
I've heard the programmes that they're trying to implicate into Croydon. Mm-hmm. Obviously, about the homeless people and talking about mental health. And I feel like it's massive, and it's great to see them getting kids into it from early so they understand and obviously try to help. Because I feel like homelessness is massive, and not many people really do anything about it. And obviously mental health is becoming bigger and bigger. And I feel like social media doesn't help either, because people tend to, like, me personally, as a professional footballer, I get so much abuse on social media, and it's like, how do you stop it? Because people make fake accounts just to abuse people. So hearing that there's programs to help change those things is nice to see. It's big.
And again, another example of yourself coming along, but the power of the Premier League to kind of make an important change in young people's lives, that can only be good to see.
Yeah, definitely, because the Premier League's massive. It's something that everyone watches. All the kids watch it, and it's like, if the Premier League are getting involved in that, I feel like that's going to make a massive difference to things.
And in terms of, you know, reaching marginalised children as well, which is, you know, what the Palace for Life Foundation does, that can have such a huge impact, can't it?
Yeah, it'll have a massive impact. I'm just glad I can be part of it, really, and put the spotlight on these things, really, and have a voice in it, because obviously there's not much being done, and it's nice to see Palace for Life proper trying to change these things.
Mm-hmm. Well said. We'll move on to Premier League matters now, which I'm sure is very much on your mind as well.
Yeah.
It's sort of been a difficult run though, hasn't it? One win in the last 10 Premier League games. Has confidence been shaken in you and the other players at Palace?
Not really. I feel like it's obviously we have hard games, but I don't think it's confidence really. It's just we've gone through a hard period. We had a lot of players injured just coming back. So things don't always go your way. Mm. Like the game that we lost last against Sheffield, I feel like the team played amazing, but obviously we've had games where the luck's gone for us, and then like obviously things change after if the ball didn't just drop into our goal. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would have been an amazing performance. So it's not a thing of confidence, it's a thing where we just have bad luck sometimes, and in football things change. You just got to keep on working at the process, really.
Yeah, and eventually those little details,
little marginal things change.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I mean, one thing is, I'm sure it's been talked to death about, but you know, the average age of the Palace squad is the oldest in the Premier League from the starting 11s, anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Is there sort of two ways of looking at that? One, you know, you've got a really experienced squad, and that can be great. But then the other way, could it do with some rejuvenation, some more youth?
Yeah, definitely. But we do have some youngsters coming through. We've got Brandon, so it's nice to see. But at the same time, you can look at it both ways. People can say, yeah, we have the oldest squad. But at the same time, we have the most experience. People who's played in Champions League, people who's done it for years. So it just depends how you look at it, really.
Mm. But it's not something that, you know, immediately worries you.
I don't think it worries me at all, because I play with these people day in, day out, and I've got absolute trust in them. It's been obviously the January period, the December period was hard, so many games.
Yeah.
And me myself, I'm not the oldest, but my body feels like I've been through the most. So it's not an easy period, but I trust in all the players that are in the team, and I feel like this is just a rough patch, but we'll get through it.
So is there any, you know, looking over your shoulder down the table, or do you feel like enough of, you know, the good work has been done in the early part of the season to make sure that safety is guaranteed?
I feel like you can never say the good work's been done and we're fine, because you got to constantly prove why you're a good team, go out there and try to win games. So I'm not the type to even look at the table and try to add up things, and if they no, I feel like what we do on the pitch will make a difference. So I tried to put that across to my teammates as well. Like, we just need to provide the performances. Don't worry about anyone else. Don't look down, don't look up. Mm-hmm. Just win as much as you can, really. So it's a thing where, obviously, no one likes to lose games, but we're taking each game as it comes, really.
I mean, it's nice to see you kind of talk quite positively about it, because you'd be forgiven for being a bit down in the dumps, you know, with recent results. But I'm not getting that impression from you today.
No, because I feel like, well, what am I going to gain from it?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Being sad about it, it's gone. Mm-hmm. All you can do is work on your future, what you can control. So I moan a lot on the pitch, but I feel like you can only move forward by thinking forward, not just being sad about the past, really.
I mean, worth looking at Everton then, because, you know, they've been very impressive since Ancelotti come in. Have you been impressed with them yourself?
Yeah, they're a good team. They've got a lot of good players, but it's a thing where we're a good team as well. On a good day, I feel like we can beat anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we just need to, obviously, we're not going to be naive and go into the game and think that they can't hurt us, but I feel like we just need to focus on us and what we can do to hurt them. They're on a good run, but people's runs can get stopped, and we've stopped people's good periods before, so I'm just looking forward to the game, man.
And just a couple of questions about yourself, Wolf, to finish off on. Chris Wilder, I don't know if you saw this, but he basically described you as the best winger in the Premier League, so when you hear praise like that,
that's,
you know,
nice to hear.
That's a good smile, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
I didn't expect that. It's nice to know, man. It just shows that all the hard work I'm putting in, people are seeing.
Mm-hmm.
So hearing him say that, I appreciate it a lot, because obviously I'm working hard behind closed doors, and obviously it shows on the pitch. So yeah, I'm happy to hear that.
Working hard behind closed doors, but would it be also fair to say that you would have liked to have had a few more goals this season?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, I'm doing my best to work at that. Obviously, last season I managed to get 10 somehow. So this drought right now is killing me. But all I can do is just get back to the drawing board and just every game that comes, just I feel like I just need to shoot more. That's the only thing that I lack in. If you don't shoot, you don't score, and I just need to shoot a lot more. So, yeah, hopefully up and coming this part of the season, hopefully I get more goals.
So, I mean, that was going to be my last question, is what can we expect from Wilf Zaha between now and the end of the season?
Definitely more goals. Yeah. Definitely more goals. I feel like that's all I'm lacking right now. Yeah. So that's what everyone should expect from me.
Great.
Wilfried Zaha there, and now moving on to the manager who came into his press conference today, and the journalist asked the same old questions. Enjoy.
You know, it's sometimes a bit harder to take when you think the team has played well and you've lost. It's sometimes easier when you've played badly and there's lots of things you've seen gone wrong and you're looking forward to correcting. But the training's been good this week, and I think our preparation for the game on tomorrow has been as good as it can possibly be. So let's see what the outcome of that game's going to be.
And how's Guaita been? Because I know you said he apologised after the game. He had nothing to be sorry about. How's he been this week?
No, and that's what we've said to him again. No, he's been very good. I mean, goalkeepers, unfortunately, they're in that position, aren't they, at the cutting edge of football. You know, everyone can see the error the goalkeeper makes. Everyone can see the error the centre-forward makes when he misses a goal chance. There's a lot of people in between who make quite a few mistakes, but they get away with it because a goal doesn't come about because of it, and everyone then forgets it in the maelstrom of the game. So we made it perfectly clear to him, the whole club, really, that, listen, you know, mistakes happen. It's good you hold your hand up and admit that the mistake is yours, but the fact is we're not concerned about that because you've done so many good things for us, and we are where we are in the league largely thanks to some of your performances, so you just have to forget about it like we forget about it.
And is there any updated injury news ahead of this weekend?
Well, we've lost Martin Kelly, which is a blow. Unfortunately, in the it's not really a warm down, in the little bit of training that players sometimes do after a game when they've not taken any part as substitutes, he managed to pick up a slight calf strain. It's not a massive calf strain, but it's enough, unfortunately, to keep him out of this week's game. But otherwise, we just have the same injuries that we had before. Cenk Tosun is injured, but can't play anyway. And Mamadou Sakho and Jeffrey Schlupp are continuing on their recovery.
And Everton tomorrow, a team in pretty good form at the moment, came back from two goals down last weekend. Are you expecting them to be full of confidence tomorrow?
Absolutely. Their record in the last, is it 10 games, I think, has been quite exceptional. And Carlo's obviously done very well since he came into the club and has generated a lot of positivity. And the players are obviously full of confidence, which good results bring with it. So we understand it's going to be a tough game. It always is, to be fair, at Goodison Park. I don't care who the manager is or what 11 players they put on the field. It's always a difficult game up there. But we're ready for that. We're prepared for that. It's part of our Premier League season. So bring the game on and let's hope it's a good one.
And you mentioned Carlo Ancelotti there, obviously a manager you know well from your times in Italy and from him being in the Premier League before. Have you spoken to him since he's come back over? And what do you make of the job that he's done so far?
I regard him as a friend and I've known him for a very long time. You're quite right, from the days when he was working with Arrigo Sacchi and the national team. So I'm not surprised that it's gone well. I think it was a clever appointment. Someone with his experience, someone with his talent as a coach, obviously is going to succeed wherever he goes. And Everton decided it was the right moment to bring him on board. And they've been amply rewarded for that by the results and by the way that the players have responded to him. So I'm looking forward to seeing him, that's for sure. But of course, when the game starts, I might be wishing I wasn't seeing him.
It was announced yesterday that the summer deadline will be moving back in line with the rest of Europe, so moving to the 1st of September. Just your reaction to that?
Yeah, very positive. I think that, you know, there was no real reason in that I could relate to in changing that and coming out of line. You know, there's always arguments, you know, for everything that's put forward, and I know there was a valid argument put forward, but I didn't really buy into it, so I'm quite happy to see it now back where it once was and to see us in line with Europe again.
And I suppose before we look too far ahead, your future has been talked about quite a bit this week. Have there been discussions? Are you any closer to an extension here?
Well, the fact is that the chairman and I had very positive discussions during the week, so I have no reason to doubt that the intention of the club is still as it always was, to ask me to stay and prolong my contract. So I shall no doubt be having further discussions in the coming days, and we'll see where that leads to. But there's certainly, you know, those, the thing when you're a manager, you sometimes have to read other people's opinions of how you feel and what you're thinking. I prefer, really, if I'm going to be involved in those type of comments and to do interviews with journalists and to speak to them and to tell them what I'm thinking. It was a little bit irritating to find other people telling you what you're thinking and telling you what you think. But I understand it's part and parcel of being a football manager and part and parcel of your professions. But I certainly have never made any sort of comments which could any way be related to some of the things which I believe have been suggested or written. I said last week, before the game against Sheffield United, that as far as I was concerned, there was no reason to doubt that the club's intention to want me to stay should be doubted anyway, and I still don't feel that should be doubted in any way. And when it comes to transfers and transfer windows, yes, the last one was a bit disappointing, not least of all because we thought we were well on the way possibly to acquiring the signature of a young right-back, Ferguson, that we think is a good player. But of course that fell through because of the fact that he needs an operation. So had that happened, it would have been a lot more positive anyway. And secondly, there's no difference of opinion about what needs to be done. It's just a question of finding a way, really, to get the right players and, you know, get their signatures and get them into the building. And that's a lot harder. It's very easy to talk about targets and talk about recruitment. It's a lot harder to find the players that you really need, that are the right ones for your club, and get them through the door. And that's something which affects us all. It's not me versus anybody. We're all in that together, and we're all in the process together of trying to find those players, trying to add to the squad, but to add to it in a way which will make us a stronger unit.
Okay, and just lastly from me, a bit of a gear change, but Lionel Messi could be available for free in the summer. Had a right. Public bust up with Eric Abidal. Right. Could you ever see him in the Premier League?
I thought you were going to ask him if Crystal, could see me at Crystal Palace for a minute.
I was preparing
a different answer. You could see Lionel Messi anywhere, couldn't you? I mean, I just get the feeling, though, that Lionel Messi has been such a fantastic, iconic player and figure for Barcelona Football Club that it would surprise me a little bit if, at this late stage of his career, that he was to leave and seek fresh pastures. But you should never be surprised about anything in football, so when I say I'd be surprised, I probably wouldn't, because nothing really surprises you in that respect. But if I was a Barcelona fan or connected anyway with the club, I would be working very hard to try and persuade Lionel Messi that, you know, this is the place where you end your career, and I'm pretty sure that when his playing career ends, he'll be still connected with the club in some way, because he's such a Barcelona and Lionel Messi, they just go together, don't they?
Thank you.
Okay, Joe from Peel.
Hi, Roy. Carlo Ancelotti has been described as very calm, especially coming in with the job he had ahead of him. How would you compare that with the way you're feeling at the moment?
In what respect, calm? Sorry, aren't I always calm?
He's been described as coming in knowing the task he has ahead and just doing it with a very calm approach, and that seems to be working with the players. I just wondered, given that their team's having a good run, you guys are having a slightly slower last few games, how that might compare with how you're feeling.
Well, I'm pretty sure that, you know, the calmness that you feel is always tends to disappear anyway the day before a game, because then you anticipate all the things that can happen and go wrong in the game. So I don't think he'll be feeling particularly calmer than I feel. I believe that we've done our work this week and we've prepared the team properly to play the game, and that the team I have is capable of going to Everton and getting a result. And I'm absolutely sure that he feels the same way about his team. And you could argue that he's got more reason than I have, because you rightly say we've lost the last two games and they're on a fantastic winning streak. But we all know in football that winning streaks come to an end and losing streaks too. So it's only two games. Before that, we had a good run of unbeaten, in actual fact. So we haven't lost confidence in that. But I'm expecting to go and meet a very confident Everton team tomorrow, backed up by incredible support and with a manager who really believes that the work he's doing is paying dividends, and the work he's doing will lead his team to another victory. And it's our job to stop that.
Are you worried about the lack of goals at the moment from Palace? And can you pinpoint why that's a problem at the moment?
Well, it's been a problem all season. Obviously, you know, I don't think that we can deny the fact that the number of goals we scored is nowhere near what we would like it to be. Luckily, we've backed that up with a fairly good defensive record, so our goal difference isn't ludicrous and our points total isn't ludicrous. But of course, we'd like to score more goals, but I still believe personally that with the three front players that we're playing in the games, Wilf Zaha, Christian Benteke now, or Tosun just before he got injured, and Jordan Ayew, I think they are three very good attacking players, and I don't think I need to be terribly concerned that if we're not scoring in the last couple of games, that will go on forever, because there are goals in the team, and it's just a question, I suppose, really, of breaking that duck which we've had in the last two games.
Everton have lost 50% of their home games this season, and Palace have obviously been doing very well away from home. So does that add maybe a little bit more spice perhaps to this game, make it more interesting and open?
Not for me, no. I mean, the spice in the game is the spice in the game. It's the same sort of spice in the game I feel every weekend before every Premiership game, so I don't feel anything extra in that respect. But it's these are the sort of figures and these are the sort of statistics which do interest people and certainly can add spice to the sort of spectators' view of the game that's coming up. But I think when you're managing and coaching, you don't tend to think along those terms. You just tend to think in terms of, well, what team am I able to put out onto the field this week? How are they looking? Are they prepared? You know, do we look as though we're in the sort of form that can cause problems to our opponent? And we tend not to see things in that statistical way.
Thank you. Okay, James from
Talksport. Roy, Wilfred Zaha was saying this week that he feels that you're not far away from getting that win, and it's only fine margins preventing Palace from getting over the line. Is that how you feel as well?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of games to go, isn't there? And, you know, we need points from some of those games. And I'm convinced we'll get them, absolutely. And it's nice to hear Wilf saying that too. You've got to be careful. You know, the game against Southampton, we understood really why that one didn't go our way, because it came after the Man City game, after a run of very, very tough games with very many players injured. And you know, we really dragged every ounce out of every muscle and sinew of the players who were able to play. It was more disappointing on Saturday to lose another game at home, but there's reasons there for that too, and that there was a very, very great difference between the two performances. Against Southampton, we really didn't play well, and we had to hold our hands up and say that was a game that we probably deserved to lose. I think most of us on Saturday against Sheffield United felt that we were a little bit unlucky, and it was a game we could so easily have won. So I think we'll take confidence from our good performance against Sheffield United, the way we played. It was certainly a step back towards some of the good performance we've had earlier in the season in terms of our possession, in terms of the way we went forward, even in terms of the way we defended. So, you know, you've got to be very careful. You know, statistics, they can weigh heavily upon you, but you know, who was it who said there are lies, damn lies and statistics? I never quite know who made that quote, but it's always very relevant for me, and you have to be very careful before you start yourself believing too much in what a statistic tells you and forget maybe what your eyes are telling you, what your feelings are, what you're seeing in the training sessions. All of those things I think are very important. We talked about Carlo Ancelotti and his calmness and his experience, and I'm pretty certain that is something that comes to you through the years as well, that you don't dismiss facts and statistics, you know, you take them on board, and but you don't necessarily base all your decisions upon them, because there could be some underlying factors which are every bit as important as that particular statistic.
James McCarthy plays against Everton at Goodison Park for the first time since he left the club. He's played a lot for you in recent weeks. Just how impressed have you been by him so far in a Palace shirt?
Yeah, he's been good. He's getting better and better as well. You know, we're quite blessed in that area. We have four very good central midfield players. Certainly you've rotated during the season, and there's one or two others, people like Max Meyer and Jairo Vidalt, who are knocking on the door waiting for their opportunity too. So we're not weak in that area of the field. We're quite blessed, and it's really good to see James McCarthy, who came to us after quite a long absence, really. His fitness had been re-established at Everton, but of course he wasn't able to break into the team and was spending long periods on the outside looking in. He had to do that for a week or two or a month or two even, perhaps, when he came here too. But it's nice since he's broke into the team to see his confidence growing, and we are now beginning to see the player that I always knew he was, and the player that I actually persuaded the club to buy, because I knew that, you know, in James McCarthy we were getting a top class Premiership football player.
Just finally, I know you haven't signed a contract yet, but are you already planning for the future here at Palace in terms of decisions behind the scenes, in terms of investment and ideas and things you want to get in place for next season?
Yeah, there's been no difference there at all. You know, my relationship with the chairman and with Doug Friedman remains exactly as it has been, and certainly there's been no question of me not wishing to involve myself in any discussions regarding the current state of the team, but also, you know, going forward. And there's a great degree also of unanimity between us in terms of what we need to do. Getting those things done is not always so easy as agreeing what needs to be done, but it's a start. It's a start when you've got unanimity in terms of approach, unanimity in terms of what needs to be done. And it will mean, of course, that between now and the end of the season, a lot of work will have to be done by everybody to make certain that if we're going to achieve our goals, if we're going to be able to make changes in the summer and improve our squad and, you know, make the necessary rejuvenation to some extent that's necessary as well, a lot of work's going to have to be done, and that will start, I'm pretty certain, now that the transfer window is over, because transfer windows, unfortunately, they weigh heavily on everybody, not least of all chairmen, who are fighting off phone calls every day from agents in particular or journalists like yourself wanting to know what's going on. And also, of course, all clubs and chairmen are being put under extra pressure these days, because we've created a new table. You know, we've got the league table, but then we've got the money spending table, and we're constantly being reminded where you happen to find yourself on the money spending table. And the suggestion is, well, if this team is spending more than you, they're doing better than you are. We all know that that's not necessarily or strictly true, but it's a fact that everyone has to live with, and not least of all, the people have to live with that are the people who are in charge of clubs, because the clamour from the outside will be, well, how come this team are above you on the table in terms of in the table on their spending?